Looking to find new music quickly? Tired of hearing the same music over and over again on a playlist? You no longer have to waste time searching on YouTube. With the Headline Music app, it's as easy as swiping left or right on songs you like or dislike. Be the first to discover new bands before they become the next big thing. Just download the Headline Music app now in the App Store and start swiping.
Bands and relationships, being in a band is a relationship, you know, and it's like a relationship with like four or five people, which can be complicated, but like in any relationship you have with friends or, you know, significant others, you want people that you sort of, you know, gel with. Similar mindsets, you know, everyone's going to have their differences of opinions, but you try to compromise, try to give everybody, you know, a little bit of what they want. In general, everyone kind of wants the same thing, you know, just play good music.
What's happening? Welcome to The Working Circle, my brand new monthly podcast. Once a month, I'll be sitting with artists and music business professionals. We'll talk about their stories, successes, and the things that they learned along the way to help you learn from people that have made a career in the music business as independents, as music entrepreneurs. In this first season, the focus will be on building a career from the ground up. How to get started and how to progress throughout the difficult stages and different stages of a career as an independent musician. So today, let's start with the foundation, establishing yourself as a musician and forming a band. For those of you who have played and want to make the jump into being a musician, this will help you get started. Today's guest is a longtime friend of mine, actually, Mark Taylor, of Chicago-based Rolling Stones cover band Rocks Off, as well as being a singer-songwriter with an album out. As part of the band Rocks Off, Mark has played festivals and major venues, including Chicago's House of Blues. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
Great, man. It's great to see you.
It's good to be here.
Everyone's story begins with what got them into music, so tell me about when you knew you wanted to be a musician.
I've always loved music because, you know, it surrounds us our whole lives. I mean, as long as you're living the right kind of life, I suppose, you know. But parents listening to it on the radio in the car, always loved it. But it wasn't until, I guess, maybe my teenage years that I found my own music that I enjoyed. Like, you know, I was introduced to Jimi Hendrix, and when I got into Nirvana, you know, they're two kind of different ends of the spectrum. But I would envision myself, you know, singing, playing guitar, you know, but more of like a fantasy type thing. You know, I was like, oh, that'd be so cool if I could do that. And wasn't really until my 20s I realized that I could sing. I tried to play guitar back as a teenager. It was so. This was before your great tutelage.
Oh, yes.
That took my guitar skills, you know, to where they needed to be. But it wasn't until my 20s I realized, oh, I can sing. People, you know, you do karaoke enough, people tell you, hey, you have a good voice. And it's more than just patting on the back and being nice. And so I started to realize, oh, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can be a musician. I can sing, play guitar, you know. And it did take some work. But I would say at some point in like early to mid-20s is when it sort of something I realized that I could possibly do and I really would like to do beyond just like, you know, dreams of a teenager.
Yeah, the dreams of the teenager are many. Yeah.
At that point, you know.
Yeah, well, you were talking about the being, when I was a teenager, I'm thinking, I wonder how many teenage boys have had that dream when they listen to their favorite music.
I would say 100% of them. Yeah, totally.
Then you decided to pursue it. Now, you since you mentioned tutelage, so for our listeners, Mark, a long time ago, came to me
from a long time ago,
back when I was a boy,
more than a decade.
That's right. Yeah. Came to me for vocal coaching and then we worked on guitar. I think there was a little bit of songwriting tips going in there too. Because you mentioned that, would you say that getting training is absolutely an essential part of making a career in music, and if so, why, or what kind of training should you make sure you have?
Take it either way. You know, for me, it was essential because doing it on my own, I was only kind of sort of, you know, half-assed, and there's so much available on YouTube now. I mean, I'm trying to teach myself piano, and I'm finally committing more to it, and YouTube's just full of a bunch of stuff you can learn. But I still think
it's full of a lot of
stuff. Yeah, it's full of a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, but having a you know, an experienced teacher as a guide, and also I felt that too, that doing the weekly classes that you're paying for, you got to be on it. You can't just, you know, not do it and show up. I mean, you can, and then you sort of feel embarrassed that you didn't do your homework, or you're not performing well in front of the teacher, and you're wasting your money and everyone's time.
Yeah.
So that kind of holds you to a level of commitment, and keeps you on track. And that's what I found that I needed, that I previously would, like, I'd play guitar for maybe a couple months, then I wouldn't. And then I, you know, it was just more of a nice consistent weekly thing. And also, you had I had reached a point where this is what I really wanted. So, you know, it was a combination of, yes, I want this, and then I got these weekly classes that's kind of keeping me on track. And but I needed the discipline and the consistency, and, you know, someone there to you know, like a person. Yeah, YouTube videos are good, but the interactions, the questions, the, you know, confidence boosting that you need, or whatever, when you're discouraged.
And then from my own personal experience in that too, it was the same, similar thing. It was like, well, I needed the to be accountable, held accountable. But there are also things that I didn't know I needed to know. There were gaps in the knowledge. So it was going and sorting that out helped a ton. We know when you decided you needed to be a musician, was Rocks Off your first band, or give us a little history there?
It was not. I had tried out for a couple. Once I, actually, it was funny, before I, the reason I went to you for vocal lessons, because I was trying out and it wasn't really happening. And one guy, you know, he's like, you got a good voice, but you need to work on intonation and this and that, whatever. And when I was singing karaoke, I would, like, three songs, four songs, like, voice would be kind of like gone. So I was like, I need to, like, learn how to sing. And once I took the vocal lessons, I tried out for a band, and it worked out. It wasn't Rocks Off. It was another Stones band that was looking for a singer, Craigslist ad that I answered. And I was just looking to be a singer in a band. I'm like, yeah, Rolling Stones, they're pretty good. Mick Jagger, I want to be a front man. He's one of the best. And so that was my first band. I was a little late starter. I was 27 or so when I finally got into that. And I looked at it initially like, well, let's just be in a band, see where it goes a year or two, and then move on to something else and or whatever. And then it just turned into about 7 or 8 years, and then I changed things up, started a different Rolling Stones band that became Rocks Off. I took one of the members, our lead guitar player from the first band, transferred over to the Rocks Off, but it was mostly a new band.
Did that other band dissolve? Or did you just find that it could be put together better? Did you start to recognize where improvements could be made, and that you were the person to make those improvements? Any of those things?
Yes. There was limitations that the band had, you know, due to just members not being where I want. You know, musically, just wasn't what I wanted it to be. And it worked. We still got a lot of good gigs and we did some good things, but I just felt there could be more, it could be better. And you know, I kind of left it and dissolved it sort of, and then found new players, and now the musicianship and everything of the band is exactly where I want it to be, and it's a lot better. But it was the tough decision to do it, because you're in a band that it's working, but not exactly not as well as you want, you know. And you're just kind of
There's a level of connection with anybody that you're playing, with whom you're playing music. There's an element of trust developed between you. There's a certain amount of vulnerability everybody's sharing with each other. These connections evolve whether you intend they do or not, whether these are people that you would even hang out with or not. You develop these connections, so it can be difficult to go and make those changes. What was the best reason you can think of for making those changes, other than you say, well, the musicianship wasn't what you thought it should be, or the show could have been better? Why does that matter?
Because you want to, like, at least me, I want to put on the best show I can. I want to, you know, it's show business. I like to show off. I want to have behind me, or whatever I'm doing, I want to say, this is me doing the best thing I can. And I felt it was a little uneven with the band. You know, and I just felt like that this band could be better. When I play a show, I want to be able to proudly brag about, you know, this band or whatever, and just, hey, look at us. This is what we're doing. This is what we're throwing at you, and I love it, and I'm proud of it. And the way things were, I was like, yeah, it's good, but And it just, people weren't on the same level, and it was just sort of, you know, just wasn't what I wanted it to be. So
you want your audience to have a good show.
Yeah, yeah.
People are expecting something. So if you have any pride in your work, whatever you do, it makes the job more enjoyable because you're constantly in the process of improvement.
Yeah.
Now, how do you manage with all the creative differences within the band now? You say you've brought the musicianship up. You obviously demand something of these guys. All guy band?
Yeah, all guy band.
Okay,
yeah.
So I want to make sure I got it right. We're calling guys and MP, you know,
yeah.
Or something. So how do you get something out of them? How do you motivate them other than, you know, I'm paying the bills? How do you deal with creative differences, et cetera? Walk through the management of the group a little bit.
Well, number one, you want to have people around you that have the similar level of pride. So therefore, it's not too difficult to get out of them what you want, because they also, you know, want people on the same page with that. And creatively, we are playing other people's music, but, you know, how we do it and which songs we choose, you know, and what kind of era do we want to represent, I guess, would be, you know, the creative parts, I suppose.
And you guys represent a specific era of the Stones.
Yeah, we try to, like, you know, late 60s, early 70s, Mick Taylor era.
Start Me Up.
Yep, that's where we stop.
That's where it stops.
I stop at 1981, Tattoo U. People say, hey, why don't you play? I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's a decision that has to be made, and mostly everyone's on board with it. I mean, we do have a couple new, we do want a new song, but I'm just like, I don't like it as much. But that's a thing, but you try to compromise, as always. I mean, bands and relationships, being a band is a relationship, you know, and it's like a relationship with like four or five people, which can be complicated, but like in any relationship you have with friends or, you know, significant others, you want people that you sort of, you know, gel with to an extent, similar mindsets, you know, everyone's going to have their differences of opinions, but you try to compromise, try to give everybody, you know, a little bit of what they want. In general, everyone kind of wants the same thing, you know, just play good music that the audience enjoys, that we enjoy. You know, that's the thing too with some of the song choices. Like, if I'm not having fun with it, I don't really like it. I don't really want to do it. I'm the one that's got to sell it out there.
Well, so. Yeah. And if you're not having fun, why phone it in for the audience?
Fun.
Why would you
do that? Phoning in is, you know, people can see the phoning in. They can see your phone.
Yeah, yeah.
You're sitting there, they see your phone.
Yeah, yeah. They can see you're faking it, right? Yeah. And what's interesting with that aspect of it is, when you are not into it, your audience isn't sitting there going, I know exactly what's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, he's not into it, or I know what they, they don't know what it is. They just know if it is.
Feels a little off or something.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, I don't know. Yeah. They seem like they're really good, but it's not doing anything for me. If you all are not in there together, then it's like five people in five different bands, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
We
make money.
You make a living.
I make a living doing this.
Yeah. And what about the other guys? Are they pros? Are they?
Drummer.
I mean, they're professional by the quality of work that they do.
Yeah.
I always stress that professional is an attitude as much as anything. But in this case, I'm using pro from the standpoint: are they full time musicians?
We have a couple, like, you know, rotating bass players, and our guitar player is like retired. But so, you know, he's retired pro musician now. I mean, he definitely was in the past and stuff. Drummer is, I am, guitar player. So yeah, most of the band is, and then we got a couple guys, you know, that maybe have some day jobs. But
you
in general,
you bring in a horn section too sometimes.
Yeah, no, you know, we have a couple different horn sections depending on availability. You know, some of those guys might have jobs. I don't know everybody's story, but the keyboard player that we, you know, tend to use, he's pro. Like, you know, it's a lot of pro guys that are, this is what they do. And because they do it for a living, they're good. You know, it's when you do it all the time, you get a lot better at it.
You can't work in a city like Chicago and not be pretty damn good to make a living, because you can go into a dive bar and still hear quality music.
Yeah. You know? The great thing about Chicago, there's a lot of opportunity.
So what else about the business side of stuff? Now, do you have you don't have contracts with the guys, do you?
No, not yet. Not the members. We're all Number one, whatever we make, we split it, you know, five ways or six ways or however.
You don't take out something for the band specifically for the...
I mean, it depends if we have something like, if we're doing a video or something, it's just like, so this show is going to go pay for that or whatever. But in general, we kind of, most shows, like, you know, we make X amount of dollars, it gets split, you know, five ways of the core members. If we get a keyboard player or a horn section, that's usually a predetermined price. Hey guys, can you play that? They're like more the hired guns for the show. But the core members, everyone splits evenly. People have told me I haul around the PA system, I do, you know, a lot of the booking. We should take a little bit more. You know, it's just simpler, better if everyone just makes the same. And it doesn't leave room, it leaves no room for like any sort of simmering animosity or problems with money.
What you're saying there are people like, well, you know, you haul the PA, you book the gigs and that kind of stuff. Shouldn't you take more? There are bands that will do that.
Yeah, and some people do, and like that's fine. I just don't want to.
Now, but you're the boss of the band. Your final decisions land on you if they need to be made. If there's
that consensus. We try to do democracy. Everyone gets their 2 cents. I ask, hey, do you want to do that? If it's a questionable gig, maybe pay wise, or I say, hey, this is what it is, or you know, we're going this far. I want everybody's input all the time, and if I have to make a decision, then I will. But in general, we're usually all on the same page about it, everything. But I want everyone's opinion.
But you're not gonna go to them with a gig that doesn't pay as well if you're not willing to play it already.
Yeah. I mean, in general, we try to set a minimum price, and sometimes I feel that you can compromise on that minimum price. You got to have your value and stuff, and then when you figure this is what it's worth for us to go out. But you know, depending on, well, it's a good opportunity to, you know, hopefully in the future maybe we get paid more, but it's a good region that we don't play or something. There's always, I think, reasons to just kind of, you know, compromise on what your price is depending on the situation.
Is the three things, right? Is it fun? Does it pay? And does it enhance your brand, or that is your image? However you like to, whatever phrase you like to use. So when you say, hey, you know, just use a flat figure. Hey, we're worth $1,000. It's half about the money. It's also half about saying we are worth whatever. We work at this level, and therefore we demand this level.
We didn't just throw it together. Yeah, I mean, people don't really want to pay for stuff, and people just think, "Oh, play my party. I'll, you know, give you some beers and $50." Like, well, no. This is how much it costs for this amount of time from, you know, and the craft that I've had to develop and all the hours and hours of practicing. I don't use an iPad when I play, you know, and a lot of people do, and it limits me, but I have those 220 whatever songs in my head. I spent a lot of time learning all those darn lyrics.
And that's something too, that's important for people to always keep in mind when you're developing a band or which includes a solo act, you know, be clear on what you are willing to do. And what you are not willing to do, and don't base it on how quickly can I get my butt out there playing in front of people and how quickly can I make a buck doing it. Because you will get to a point where you start going, why am I playing this kind of gig or that kind of gig?
Going back to the business thing, the booking aspect is the part that's the biggest pain. But you got to do it because you got to book the gigs to make the money. And it's just the reaching the people, and different managers come in and out, and venues close or bars close, and it's a constant struggle to sort of to get in touch with everyone and book all the gigs. And
so. Well, you also, with places that don't close, you develop a relationship with certain places too. It's a matter of creating relationships with people, just like with the band, right? You create a relationship with the guys in the band. You create a relationship with the places that book you. You create a relationship with your audience.
Yeah.
And so where you have developed these relationships of trust and mutually beneficial, you know, gigs, you have something that you can consistently depend on and you can consistently build on. What are some major lessons you feel you've learned, things that you on an ongoing basis or on a regular basis you find you go back to? Some lesson you learned that helps you keep your head on straight or anything like that?
You know, I still struggle with it, but don't get frustrated with maybe you were playing a place for a while and then now you're not playing there anymore because maybe now there's a different manager that's doing the booking and they don't know you. I'm talking about that relationship. You establish these relationships and then they go poof and you're like, and then like, and I played there for years. I'm not playing there anymore. And you just, they have frustrations with the booking. I mean, you'll be frustrated, like in life and everything. You just gotta kind of roll with it. Got a lot of it roll off your back. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's. I know I'm happy with my work and what I'm doing and my life, you know, as it is right now. So, whatever complications arise, you just gotta kind of go with it.
Something that I you know that I did that a lot of other people have done and do is gradually.
Phase out.
Yeah, thank you for that. I was looking for that word. To gradually phase out the day job or the other work that you're doing, and continue to just replace it with other consistent forms of work in music.
It does take a while to build. I was really in the beginning. Does, yeah. I only had a couple, and it just took. And I thankfully had like a severance and stuff, and it just allowed me a little bit of transition phase. Yeah. But yeah, it took like a year or two or so to get sort of like a sort of more consistent, steady thing, and get those relationships with those venues and bars. And number one, you have to love music. You know, that's a given. But if you do love it and you want to do it, I always definitely try to pursue it. Because the opportunities are out there. There's a lot of places to play. Go out, talk to other musicians, you know, go see them play, pick up on, you know, kind of what they do, how they approach their stuff. But it's definitely possible, as long as you love it, because you're going to have to put work in, and there's going to be a lot of work, you know, learning songs and doing all the booking and all that kind of stuff. But, in the beginning, you don't really know. I definitely didn't think I'd get to a point. I mean, there are some months where I made like a good chunk of change for a month, and I was like, holy, I never could have imagined that I'd have this many paying this well and stuff. But it takes a while. Like when you start out, you're playing for maybe, you know, $100 a gig, and then it gets up to $200, $250, sometimes private things, $300 or something. I put one, I got like $500 for some like lawyer, like, you know, law office Christmas party thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's the most I've gotten paid for a solo gig. And I wish there was more of those, but it's out there. And it just, in the beginning, it's going to be a little tough and frustrating. You're kind of like, I don't know what to do or how to do this, but you know, some guys ask me, hey, what do I do? I was like, well, start, I don't know. I can give you some places, call them. Now you got to have music online that they can listen to, when you contact these people, but,
that demonstrates your live show.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least so they can go, or at least they can know what you sound like. I think they probably prefer videos because they can like see you, studio magic, true. You know, everyone can sound good, not everyone, but you know, but I think videos I think are a little bit better if you can get yourself a couple videos of you playing some songs or whatever. But,
so you talked about all the different aspects of this work, a half a dozen things you rattled off that you have to do in order to establish a band or work as a solo artist or both, and only one of them referred to the music, and it came down to be sure you love the music. You just demonstrated by the number of things you rattled off, there is a whole lot of work involved. And
unseen work that people don't kind of realize.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Would you say like 90% of the work is done by the time you hit the stage?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, like the show. Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, right.
because you've done all the work, you've done all the practice, you've learned all the songs, you booked it, you know, whatever. Really, the show is the fun.
That's always I think something that's important for people to understand too, that the show is the result of a great deal of work. What you're doing with Rocks Off, I like that you're splitting it amongst all the band members, and I think that's made possible. You're doing it clearly for management purposes. You know, you feel like it's, and for personal, I think too, is if you feel like it's the right thing to do, right?
It's fair.
Right. It seems like a fair thing. It would be just as fair for you to say there's one extra band member, it's called production costs. There were times I came out of pocket to pay band.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
In order to keep quality artists backing me up. In fact, I've always strived to have artists that are more skilled, at least in my head, than I am. And I covered one of your songs,
yeah.
My album The Unsung, and the first song on it is No Closer to Home, which is the title track from your solo album. So I want to thank you, Mark, for joining me today. It's great to see you, my friend, and tell everybody to catch up with Mark and hear Rocks Off by visiting rocksofftribute.com.
That's where we are. We're also on Facebook at Rocks Off Tribute, you know, Facebook. Rocks, I don't know what it is, but you know, Facebook, you'll find it on Facebook. Yeah, Instagram, Rocks Off Tribute, we're on there. I'm on Instagram, Mark Taylor, Facebook. You know, just Google search stuff.
Mark Taylor and Rocks Off Chicago.
Yeah.
I want to thank my producer, advisor, Calfani, back here. So that is it for the Working Circle for this month. I am Phil Circle. We will talk about booking from the artist's perspective, how to get your first gig, the types of venues available, and how to level up your performance. Until then, you can connect with me at philcirclemusic.com, Phil Circle Music on Instagram, Phil Circle on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, and LinkedIn. I'm everywhere.
Oh, yeah, LinkedIn.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm on it. I don't know. But yeah,
I don't know how much reason you have for
working
on it. I have enough things now that I can treat them. So thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful morning, evening, daytime, whatever it is when you're listening to this. Thanks for checking in. Peace.